A5. A Seminar on the Seven Synonymous Terms for God. Number 1A.
Well, during this week, we want to take the time to investigate all the questions that are coming up in regard to the seven synonymous terms for God. The style of this class has been more or less molded already last year when we were here at the college, because one evening somebody asked somebody else if he could explain to them the blendings of ideas, and he said yes, he would. He would show that in this room, actually here in the evening, and instead that one person turned up, nearly the whole class turned up. And that showed the interest in these questions and showed the necessity for really presenting the seven synonymous term again, afresh. And so that was the reason why I have decided to give this class here. It is, so to say, a refresher class on all the question of the seven synonymous terms. And I have no fixed syllabus for this week. I just let the thought of the class carry the idea forward. I will somehow guide it a little bit so that it doesn't quite get out of shape right from the beginning. But it should be a class where everybody who has some questions and queries about the seven synonymous terms would have an opportunity to bring forward this question, ask question, and I would have a chance to answer it. The only thing I would say, that if somebody asks a question which is premature and which may be answered perhaps at the end of the week, I may say, all right, let's wait, and I will answer that question later on in the week. So that we will feel that everyone should be able to interrupt me while I'm speaking, ask a question that is naturally relevant to the question under consideration, not just something out of the blue, but something that has to do with the very problem we are discussing, so that we can follow a certain line and order. But also, please be kind to me and to the class. If you ask a question, speak loudly, speak slowly, and speak distinctly, and don't speak to me, but to the class. Then you have a feel that everyone should know your question, your contribution, and then we can understand each other much better. Perhaps if I don't quite get what you want to ask me, because sometimes my English is not too good, I may repeat that question and say, is this what you want to ask? And then I may enter into answer or discussion about it. Actually, if we consider for a whole week the seven synonymous terms, it will be a terrific preparation for next week, a warming up, so to say, in the tonality of the seven synonymous term, because next week we will just go through the textbook, through every chapter, and there we will need the tonality of the seven synonymous terms. It is as if I would then be able to play on the key, so to say, of the seven synonymous term, and hoping that that would be a help, and that it will be much easier next week to follow the subject. Now, the difficulty of such a seminar as we have this week is that in this class are sitting students who have been studying the seven synonymous terms for quite a while, perhaps over 20 years. Others have only perhaps begun to investigate it, so we have a great range of level of prepared thought, and therefore we have to be also a bit patient with each other. If perhaps somebody asks something which other students may already know and feel, oh, well, why this question again? So, but I think we will see that even very fundamental question, a simple question, can be the basis of something which we value very much and can really make a great contribution. Also, a teacher always has to decide right before he starts really giving his class, does he want to be inspirational or does he want to teach methodology? A Christian Science lecturer or teacher is usually well esteemed if he can lift the whole audience right up on cloud nine and leave them there, no matter how far down they drop afterwards. And about that spot, very often the religious thought in the student asks that he gets a spiritual lift up. And this is not my way of approaching the subject. What I would like to do and to achieve is to give much more the method how to study, to show really the way how one can approach a subject, how to make exercises with the seven synonymous terms, so that when the student is going away, that he should have a feeling that for the next year he has plenty to do at home all by himself or together with another group, catching up on what has been presented during this week. That is really what I want to do. I know it has the disadvantage that perhaps we have some periods of arguing about something, of showing more the I would say the intellectual side of it and less the inspirational side, which is absolutely necessary, that also the intellectual side is being stressed, because Mrs. Eddy always uses the term intellectual in a positive way, because Christian Science is both intellectual and spiritual. And so if we come to various questions where perhaps we have to stay for some time on getting things straightened out through question and answer and arguments, don't feel that this is a lost time. It's all helping to clearing one's mind, and once our way is clear, then one can ride on that way much easier than otherwise. So I want today just to introduce the subject and take up first the question, why must we study the seven synonymous term? This is perhaps the most fundamental question that can be asked. Why the seven synonymous term? Why not something else? The religion and Christianity has been living for 2,000 years without asking what are the seven synonymous terms. So is that essential? Is that necessary? And here we would come in and say, yes, actually, this is the only important question that we can discuss. There is actually no other central theme than the question, what is God? And its answer, that God's nature can be expressed and explained through mind and spirit and soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So the central theme of the teaching of Christian Science is actually the investigation into this very question, what do the seven synonymous terms mean? How do they operate? What is their purpose? And therefore, for us, how can we get hold of the meaning and the spirit of those seven synonymous terms? We are known in the field of Christian Science that we lay much stress on the seven synonymous terms, that is our main point. And therefore, we should also be well equipped by answering all the questions regarding these terms. And one can see by talking to students all over the world that it is not so evident that every student knows all what is involved with the study of the seven synonymous terms. So our subject is not something way out, as we could say it, but something that is central, fundamental, really the ground of our being. Because the seven synonymous terms are really being. They depict being, being with a capital B, and the ideas of those seven synonymous terms are depicting our being, small b. Therefore, when we approach the subject of the seven synonymous terms, we approach the subject of the one infinite being, capitalized being, which is our being, small b. Do you know what I mean by small b? Being small b. Yes. So it is really a super important subject which we are studying this week. I would say there is actually no other important question left beside the seven synonymous terms. What is there more important, or what is there important besides being? Because if there is only one being, then actually every interest in any other subject than the one being is an interest that is misdirected, and therefore it's uneconomical for our time and thought to think about any other question than the one being. I guess this is something which one has to establish in one's mind right at the beginning and not to forget it. It's so simple, but it's so fundamental that one forgets it. Just think what we are thinking about from morning to night. Are we actually concerned with our thoughts about only the one being, or are we concerned with all that which does not belong to the one being? We can see that our thought from morning to night is concerned about all the things that are not essential, that do not belong usually to the one being. And so our whole life is usually just one unrational, uneconomical way of living and thinking, because we miss the mark. We only go right to the core of our own existence if our thought and energy is directed and focused right to the point of the one being, which are the seven synonymous terms. So I would even say this is one point of our homework, so to say. If you go home tonight and have a long evening still, just to sit down once and be quiet within oneself and say, now, come on, what is life all about? Is it worthwhile thinking and worrying about anything else but the seven synonymous terms? It's a terrific question, isn't it? Because if one is honest to oneself, one says, oh yes, I'm always missing the mark. I'm worrying about all sorts of things, about people and about the present situation and world situation, about the family and about my future and about this and about that. Does it matter if there is only one being? And that one being can be expressed through the seven synonymous term. Therefore, being conscious of those seven synonymous terms, one is conscious of the only thing that matters in the world. The only thing that matters. And this very simple insight seems to me to be so profound that one should renew that simple insight day after day, so that one is not misguided in one's activity and in using up one's energies and one's time and thought and energy and finance and everything by directing it to something else than that which alone is. And the only thing there is being, and Mrs. Eddy explained that being through the seven synonymous term. So I think we find our foothold and our basis if we let the awe of the subject well up within ourselves, that awe before what we are going to study together, that awe before the bigness of the study of the seven synonymous term, that great admiration and worship for what the seven synonymous term are really all about, and to see how nothing, how unimportant all the rest is. It's just a question of being honest to oneself first to see what one is oneself engaging in. Well, that's not English. What is the grammar of it? One shouldn't engage oneself into something else than really the study and the contemplation, the awareness of the seven synonymous term. So, all the other studies that are being contemplated in the world and have been contemplated in the world were all on a level that never touched reality. Either the world was interested in the material level, investigating what is matter, and building on the concept of matter, slowly coming to the insight that it doesn't bring us very far, except to the abyss, where we don't know what's happening with the whole world on that material basis. Or in recent years, the tendency was much more to go away from the material realm to the mental realm, to the psychic realm, thinking that this is something new, because people never read what has happened hundreds of years ago. They don't know the history of the occultism, the history of psychical, the history of the unconscious, and the history of the esoteric and the magic and so on, because they don't know it. They think, because today people are more and more interested again in occultism, in all the phases of the mental realm, that they are very advanced. What they are actually doing is to go back to the Middle Ages and even before that, and not seeing that investigating the mental realm is the most dangerous thing that one can do. The mental realm is so insecure that if that goes on, and it seems that it will go on as a transitional stage, the investigation into the mental will go on, but it will be a transitional stage because they will find out how wonderful the time was when they were leaning just on blunt matter, because that was reliable at least, and was has at least fixed rules and rules that can be relied on. Whereas the mental is hidden, it's fooling people, and so we are approaching a realm that is very dangerous. Where Mrs. Eddy said that when the world approaches that mental realm, that then really the great danger will be seen of that mental power. She had her experience herself when her metaphysics was misrepresented as mesmerism, where they couldn't see the difference between the mental and the spiritual. And this is an issue of today that we can see all over the world in all literature. No matter of what literature it is, people mix up the term mental with the spiritual. They call the mental spiritual, and the spiritual they call mental. And to draw a distinct line between the mental and the spiritual is our greatest responsibility of today. Because if the world goes only into the mental realm, which is not spiritual, then woe to the world. Then really hell will be let loose. It will come under the disguise of all nice phenomena and so on, as it always has been doing. If you know only the history, say, of mesmerism over the last 200 years, you can see how mesmerism was a phenomena that showed forth wonderful success and had a terrific attraction. Mesmer used to treat 200 people each day with success on that level, see? Well, it was an age where the mental was breaking in. We know that that was followed up afterwards by the investigation of hypnotism, then the investigation of the unconscious, then the subconscious, then of the collective unconscious, and we have the whole line that goes right through the last 80 years through psychology, through the investigation of the conscious, unconscious, subconscious, realm, and seeing that the more people usually are engaged in investigating the mental, the more they become a mental case. It's a dangerous thing to investigate and practice the mental if one does not have a spiritual background, a spiritual basis. What Mrs. Eddy presented was really the spiritual realm and not the mental realm. I think we have to be very clear in making that distinction between the materially mental realm and the spiritual mental realm, if we speak at all about the mental. Actually, our realm which we investigate is the spiritual and not the mental. The mental is that which comes from our mind. Mental is from mentis, the Latin word, mind, our mind. And everything that is coming from our mind, that is a training of our mind, that is a contemplation of our mind, that is a technique of our mind, is always limited. It's always our mind. It's the human mind, therefore limited. Therefore, it's no basis that can stand eternally. This is the great step that Mrs. Eddy has made, that she stepped out, right away, out of the mental into the one mind. She was the first one to introduce that all is mind and capitalize that mind, meaning that all is mind, namely God's own mind, and which had nothing to do at all with the mind of people, with the human mind, with the human brain, with human thinking, and therefore with thought concentration, with thought activities, with manipulation of thought, and all what is involved in it. So here we have the insight that if we go contemplate the seven synonymous term, we contemplate a realm that is absolutely spiritual, because the seven synonymous term stand all for the one infinite, therefore for the infinite one, unlimited one, consequently has nothing to do with the realm that is limited in any way or shape, namely with the mental realm or the human realm or the material realm. Now, I know that when one says that something in the student begins to work and says, but we are still living in this world, I'm still living on the earth, it's a material world, I still have a family, I still have to earn my money, we still have to eat and to drink and to sleep, and then comes up all those buts which say, but we are still here, meaning that's all right to go to think about the spiritual, but how does that spiritual have any connection with where we are right now on the human material plane? And this is the great mistake which we make by asking such a question. If we ask this question, we acknowledge right from the beginning that there are two great self-existent entities and realities in being, namely a spiritual reality on one side and another one, the human or material reality on the other side, and that one should try somehow to connect these two. Now, this is typically a wrong question which shows that one has not seen really through the whole question of what is the material realm and what is the human realm. The teaching of Christian Science shows very plainly that if we stay with the spiritual and only with the spiritual, therefore if we go out from God or from the one being, therefore the synonymous terms, that God is all and the only, and if as it is the all and the only, therefore it will take care of everything that exists in that all and only. it will take care by itself what happens on a lower level of experience than the spiritual one. Therefore, the whole Bible and also naturally the Christian Science textbook is just full, really, of stating how God governs the universe. That God, by governing himself, that's a purely spiritual realm, God, by governing himself governs also men and the universe as a lower level of experience. That the higher controls the lesser. And if we are seeing that the spiritual is the higher in the hierarchy of these levels, say that the lowest level is the material, on top of that is the human, the mental, the psychic level, and on the top of it is the spiritual level, then we must see that the higher controls the lesser. Therefore, we do not need to ask that question, but how does the spiritual realm relate to the mental realm or material realm? They are not two. It is the spiritual that controls the spiritual and the human and material. This is the great teaching that is unique to Christian Science, that there is only one being, that in that one being the only reality is the spiritual, and as the spiritual is controlling the lower levels, one begins to see that the lower levels, the mental and the material, are just slight, opaque states of the human mind that does not want the spiritual to shine through our consciousness.